Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How you going?
This
Hi.
Hi,
It worked.
Rach.
Hello.
Hi, Rach.
It's okay. We're all a bit kind of like frazzled at the moment.
It's
the world
bit...
is frazzled.
The world is frazzled.
Gee, my phones, my Siri. Siri, I don't need you right now. Thank you.
Did you say something to her?
I don't know.
Oh,
might have sounded something like, hey, you Siri, should we panic?
Sorry. Oh.
No, thank you, Siri. All right, well, if Siri doesn't know what we should do.
Well,
that's.
I guess we should just pop the kettle on.
That's the final word.
And have a chat.
All right, let's do it, shall we? Our friends are waiting for us for dinner after we have this chat.
Indeed.
So we will not faff around. Sorry, Siri, stop. Okay.
Good now?
I'm good.
Are you sure?
How are you guys?
Oh, we're good.
When I said, how's the family, everyone's okay, you
Everybody's
seemed a bit kind of like,
good.
Ugh, we're fine.
No, well, we are. Everybody's good. I think we were sort of anticipating the school closure
mm-hmm.
possibility and was
yeah.
kind of thinking about how that would work. And,
yeah.
and obviously Big One works in after-school care and
mm-hmm.
so she would be without any income.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
mm.
lots of considerations.
Lots
just
of...
kind of
Mm.
chatting about that.
Yep.
And, you know, because we're home,
mm-hmm.
we just decided to clean out small two's bedroom and get it a bit sorted.
Excellent.
So bags of stuff to Vinny's.
Yeah.
It's great.
Are you trying not to go out to any major big gatherings or anything?
Well, not to go into major big gatherings.
Yeah.
We don't have anything major and big deal. I mean, but the thing is, when Big Two goes to school, it's 3,000-something kids,
yeah.
right? So... it is a major big gathering just going to school.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So,
but
yeah.
Keep calm and carry on.
Keep calm and carry on,
there
indeed.
There is no reason to change your plans.
No, exactly. So, have
but
you guys
kind of,
changed any plans?
Yeah, we were meant to go to a show at the comedy festival last night.
Who are you going to go see?
So, it was like a local production.
Ah! Okay, Rach is pouring tea and all over herself. That was messy.
That wasn't meant to happen.
A local production.
These Kmart teapots are surprisingly not so functional.
I'm stunned.
No, they're usually pretty good. Yeah, it was a local production because... and it was written by a sort of a friend, someone who we know.
Right.
Who we ran into and said, I'm doing this production.
Yeah.
So it was called Brisburned.
Oh, Brisburned.
And it was, yeah. So reportedly, we didn't go along.
Oh.
It wasn't cancelled, but we just decided to self-isolate. But, you know, also maybe because we just decided we'd like to go out for a Thai meal instead. We
mm-hmm.
had the babysitter.
Yeah.
And I was telling you on the way here, I decided to just like... I'm isolating and fumigating, so I was just like, I'm going to go out for chili and going to order the hot. I got a tom yum soup and she said, how would you like it? And I said, hot.
Hot.
And a red curry, how would you like it? Hot.
Nice.
And some stir fry thing, make it hot.
Yes.
And yes, and garlic, and I'm feeling, seeing as though I had a psychosomatic caused self-diagnosing symptoms yesterday, my fake symptoms that never existed yesterday have now been cured
Excellent.
By the chili.
That's
so
good.
I'm feeling really good.
Is that something that you generally do? Do you kind of start to feel a little bit flu when people talk about flu season, or do you
no
you know?
I don't
no?
But you know what I think it is my husband and I were like we had like sort of 20 minutes to lie down yesterday afternoon and like
always disastrous
the busy weekend, and I'm like, so you know, I'm noticing that my shoulders are really sore and tight, I'm kind of like a bit hot, a bit clammy, you know, throat's a bit dry, and I'm like, I think this is just generally the rundown I feel all of the time.
Yeah, but then you also told me that, you know, you moved your mum from one
we
place
did.
To another.
Yes,
so,
we did. We're still
so,
having granny flat issues, but she's moved to a rental.
Oh. But you think maybe achiness and tiredness
yeah.
has probably got something to do with that.
Perhaps, one may say. Either that or COVID. Who knows? I wasn't tested.
No.
I might have been one of those ones that just had the mild symptoms and I cured it with chili.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did.
But see, even if I, psychologist, who's supposed to know the difference between psychological symptoms and physical symptoms, I'm not immune to self-diagnosing and panicking
yep,
about
absolutely.
Pandemics. So
yes.
Yeah.
It happens.
Here we are.
Indeed.
And this, we should probably just mention this is Sunday. It'll be released Monday. So it's pretty close too. So the current situation as is now.
Indeed.
Will not change much by the time this is released.
Current
hopefully.
Events. Yes. Who knows? Exactly. Mm. But, you know, people might be listening to it in 3 years' time and be going, what
That's
are they talking
true.
About?
Yes. Yeah. Well, in that case, I hope, remember that time when everyone was panicking about the pandemic.
Mm.
And remember how everything turned out okay.
Yes. Can you explain to me the toilet paper situation?
No, I cannot.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I thought there was no explanation for it, and I'm glad to hear that from your professional...
Well, I keep saying to Ben, like, I heard somewhere, like, I'm aware that there's lots of misinformation, so I don't know what's going on. I heard somewhere that the health minister or someone had said a few weeks ago, you know, there might be certain people who may need to be isolated, so next time you're at the shops, perhaps just add a little extra couple of canned goods or, you know, maybe some toilet paper or something like this. And then, I don't know, one or two people have gone, toilet paper, and then the toilet paper starts going off the shelves, and then everyone's like, everyone's going to take, there's a run on toilet paper.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know, I don't understand it, because it hasn't happened in other countries.
No, so. Well, I've heard that it has spread a little bit to other places,
right.
But not to the extent
that
where
Australia.
Somebody requires tasering.
Who knew we were quite so, you know, invested in our...
In our
nether regions.
Exactly. That's so true. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I did all my homework. You'll be very proud.
Oh, girl, you made it
all
through.
All of my homework, mm-hmm. Yes. So, dear listeners, we were talking. We mentioned that we were going to talk about today Rosie Waterland's podcast that she does called My Mum Says My Memoir is a Lie.
Yes.
And there are 22 episodes because it is 22 chapters of this particular memoir that she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And so I managed to get through all of my homework and I feel very accomplished.
Good girl.
Yeah. I feel like I need a gold star.
Yeah. Did you find it tough going as well in parts?
Oh, yeah. In parts it was tough going.
Yeah.
And it's funny because there were some chapters that I would listen to back to back. And then there were other times where I was like, that's a lot and I need to stop.
Mm.
So what about you? How did you find it?
I listened when it was first released, which I think maybe is a year ago or
right.
something like that. Yeah. And then this morning when I was folding my laundry, I was like, I might just like whack on the podcast again as a little refresher.
Yeah, nice.
Which was really nice. So I made it through the first chapter and then halfway through the second chapter or something. I was listening to it driving.
Oh, there you go.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes. So, I mean, look, I don't know. I kind of got the gist the first time around. But, yeah, I'm keen to hear your thoughts before I start talking. I would like to know Nicole's take.
Well, it's interesting because I did start making notes when I was first listening to it because I'm thinking, right, if you're sitting there next to your mum, why would you not have asked her these things when you were writing it?
Mm.
You know, if my mum says my memoir is a lie, that means that perhaps there are some differences in opinion of fact or differences in memories or that kind of thing, why wouldn't you have had this conversation already to make sure that your book was as accurate as it could be?
Indeed, yeah.
So
which is interesting. I want to hear your opinion. I'm just going to press pause and jump in.
Yeah.
Because I'd been hearing Rosie speak about her childhood experiences for a couple of years before she wrote the book.
Right.
And I'd heard her doing press for the book and she was basically like, I haven't talked to my mum about it because she's still too alcoholic that no. So I don't know if she will read it or is incapable of reading it or whatever.
Yeah. So
that's interesting because I came into it being like...
You knew that already.
Yeah.
Whereas it only kind of came later on that you realise mum was... seriously in an alcoholic stupor up until about 18 months before or 12 months before this particular podcast was recorded, which was, you know, well after the book was written.
Yes.
So, you know, my sort of initial thing was, wow, it's just it's irresponsible to not have asked.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you go through and you go, oh, no, there was no way that she could.
Yeah.
There was no way she was getting any answers out of her mum, who was basically drinking herself to death.
Yeah.
And
I remember her talking about in the press when she was kind of like, I've not tried to talk about it with my mum, but I think she was so deep in alcoholism that they couldn't tell how affected her she was neurologically.
Yeah.
Because she was like not under the influence in such brief periods of time.
Yeah.
That I think the fear really was is that she's done an immense amount of like actual brain damage. That's the way she used to talk about her. Mm. And yeah, and I think that like Lisa, Rosie's mum, is still doing quite well.
Mm.
And she's interesting to listen to on the audio too, right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, it's just, it's, oh God, it's fascinating on so many levels.
Yeah. Okay.
Go on.
No, I want to hear why it's fascinating.
That was your first thought. Like, why have they not talked about these things before?
That was my initial thought was like, I do not understand how you would not fact check this with the person that you're talking about. And then, you know, obviously that's revealed to be,
there was a really
valid reason for her not actually figuring these things out.
Yeah.
She couldn't get a coherent sentence out of her mother.
Yeah.
And then you're just going along with it and listening, just the difficulties that some people have growing up that, you know, every kid just wants to be like every other kid. No one wants to be different. No one wants to have any reason for them to be singled out for, you know, for anything. You know, you don't want to be the kid who's had to move a lot of times. You don't want to be the kid whose dad died. You don't want to be the kid who has an inordinate amount of pimples on their face or puts on weight or doesn't, you know, loses weight. Or you don't want to be different in any way when you're that age.
Yeah.
And so her trying to navigate her sort of school life, going to so many different schools, going in and out of, you know, rehab stints with her mum because she would go with her. And it's an extraordinary thing to listen to about how someone has
so many things.
So many things.
So many stories to tell.
Yeah.
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 I was, because I was skimming through like the chapter titles, right? And perhaps I'll just read some out. So if listeners, and I suggest press pause, go back and listen to the whole thing, then listen to our take on it. But, you know, the chapters are things like, your mum will be a sex worker and you'll have no idea. Your friends will find a dead body in the bush and it will be your dad. It's, I'm really aware, like when you just read these things, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay, there's another kind of sexual content one. I'll skip over that one. Your dad didn't actually die then. Your dad will finally die and you'll be relieved.
Mm.
Your foster dad will stick his hands down your pants.
Yeah, extraordinary.
It's just like, oh my God.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know. Layer upon layer of trauma. Like, how much can you pile on a small person's head?
It's I've heard her recently doing press where, because I've been listening to her latest podcast, which is, it's called Just the Gist.
Right, there it is.
Just the Gist. It was there. It was there somewhere. Just the Gist. Yeah, and she's like, oh, God, my whole story about, you know, being a writer and, like, because first of all she came to fame doing the Bachelor recaps.
Yes.
Which is, like, just completely, you know, like, in that, who knows that she has this in her history. Then she wrote this book, started speaking about her past a bit, and she's like, oh my God, it's been like 3 or 4 years of like trauma.
Yeah.
She's like, we, on my new podcast, we are not talking about any of the sad times. Yeah. We're just going to have fun talking about fun topics. Stuff.
Because that actually, she did mention a couple of times that a couple of the chapters were hard for her.
Mm.
I mean, she certainly mentioned about when it was hard for her mum as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, sorry, rewind. So it's her and her mum talking about the memoir that she wrote, and her mum challenges her on some of the statements of facts that Rosie makes.
Yeah.
But I think the title, My Mum Says My Memoir Is a Lie, is a little bit of hyperbole. She doesn't say it's a lie. There are things that she says no, or she says there's timeline issues, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But having written that book after having been through that trauma would have been a trauma in itself.
Yes.
And then recording the podcast with the person who caused some of that trauma, a significant part of that trauma.
Yeah.
Would have been traumatic as well. I mean, from a from your professional perspective, is that something that can be healing and help people move on if they do that so publicly? Or, you know, I found it extraordinary.
Yeah. So what I did do as my homework is I watched an episode of Australian Story that Rosie was on.
Oh.
And she basically said that after recording the podcast, she also had some other difficult circumstances happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
So her best friend died unexpectedly, drowned, just like freak accident, just out of nowhere. end because she had done this work with her mum revisiting all of this. She was like, she ended up because she's struggled with mental health problems and has like, you know, complex PTSD.
Yeah.
And has, you know, had psychiatrists and therapists for years and years and years and continues to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she had a real deterioration in her mental health and had to be hospitalised for a bit and was feeling suicidal. Yeah. So there's your answer.
Yeah.
I think that like it can be incredibly cathartic and important to revisit these things because traumatic events just kind of like live in isolation in the brain.
Mm.
And so getting context and perspective and the story around those circumstances is generally good. But I think that like, you know, it's not mediated. There's no therapist kind of sitting there going. And then so like Rosie and her mom and like everyone has pre-existing relationship dynamics with their parents of any stripe, having these kind of like conflicts of opinions like for everybody to listen to.
There were some that seemed okay.
Yeah.
They seemed like they had a conflict of opinion and it was sort of blown over. It wasn't a problem. Mm. It was just, a date was – it was before this or no, it was after this. That kind of conflict of opinion seemed like that they got through that quite okay.
Yeah.
But there were other times when her mum really pushed back against something that Rosie had remembered or something that Rosie said happened. And you could just feel through the – you could hear it through your – through the headphones that there was just such pain in not her, in having her mum not validate that in the moment. And I mean, there are so many things to talk about when it comes to all the trauma and all that sort of stuff, but there's also, you know, the reliability of memory
and
how, you know, two people can have memory of exactly the same situation and it be completely different because
for
not
sure.
just about perspective, but because our brain does little tricky things with us.
It does.
So, you know, that it all made sense, but you could just feel the little girl wanting to have her mum say, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I, you know, in a couple of those episodes, it felt like that.
It felt like that.
Yeah.
That memory thing is reminding me of the Malcolm Gladwell revisionist history.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of the guy, the newsreader?
Brian. He said he was under fire when he was in Iraq.
Yes.
And
his daughter is Alison. Basic last name.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, here we go.
So what happened in this situation was that at the time when it happened, this person recorded, a report saying about, there was the helicopter behind us took fire.
Yeah.
And then over sort of the next 10 years, it turned into our helicopter took fire in his mind.
Yeah.
And because, of course, it was recorded, it basically was like you're trying to claim some glory or you're trying to – but what Malcolm Gladwell talks about is the way that memory just cannot necessarily be trusted so much.
Totally.
Because it does evolve and you start to – believe the little stories that you tell in your head in the same way that he and a neighbor were talking about 9/11 and they both went through it together because
that was great, wasn't it?
It was fantastic because they live in New York. They both went through 9/11 and watched it all happen. And he was saying, and I called you and came to your apartment, and she said, no, I called you and came to your apartment.
Yep.
Or the other way around.
Yes.
You know, because I thought you might have a girl, so I was like, do you want to come to my place and we'll just keep together, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they had two completely different memories about the very same event.
Yeah. I found it.
You found
Williams.
It. Brian Williams.
Brian Williams.
There you go.
Alison Williams.
There you go. Because that was the same thing that Hillary Clinton was talking about being under fire in particular situations.
And
it was proven to be no, that wasn't the case.
Yeah,
but you know,
because the episode is called "Free Brian Williams."
Ah, there you go.
It's episode 4 of season 4.
of revisionist history.
Revisionist history.
And can I just say, if you haven't listened to it,
it is
a remarkable, it's really great podcast.
I hadn't listened to it. I'd heard about it for years, and then I just binged like all four seasons like about 6 months ago. And I still remember that one about memory because it's so great.
Yeah.
Because a newsreader, you know, who you trust to give the word of fact, you know, saying this, you know, apparently true story according to him about his autobiographical memory of being under fire, and they're just like, there's no evidence to back this up. So of course everyone assumes that he's lying, and he's like, I don't think I am.
Yeah.
Because we distort, like, things that we experience in dreams sometimes get distorted into a memory trace.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, things we hear, things we see.
Wow. Because the dream thing is interesting, because I know I will, it hasn't happened for ages, but I have in the past woken up and just been so angry at Paul.
What did he do to you in your dream?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's something, once you sort of have a cuppa and figure out, oh, no, actually that was a dream, and, oh, you were really mean to me in my dream, but I'm still angry with you because, you know, that was you in my dream. But, yeah, you can – so those can conflate with actual memories as well as then us making memories out of – because, I mean, often you make a memory out of a photograph that didn't – you don't – really remember it.
Oh, but absolutely, yeah. There's some kind of, I think the science behind it is that the hippocampus in the limbic region, deep in the middle, is kind of, they describe it as being kind of like a time stamp.
Right.
So every time that you experience an event and it goes out of short-term memory into long-term memory.
Yes.
This is where I like to think about Inside Out.
The pills, yep.
Where they have all the memory stores and the people are coming along going like, we don't, what is it, the piano stuff? Like, do we need chopsticks and whatever it is? Like, and they're kind of vacuuming it away, which is like relatively random. It's just if you don't use it, then you're going to lose it.
Right.
But, you know, the idea is that long-term memory has these stores of information. Mm. But, you know, if they're a bit rusty and they're sitting next to other kind of similar kind of memories, then they kind of just get sort of like distorted into this one kind of memory trace.
Yeah.
And in general, something that's emotive is stored more strongly because emotion, like, so when the hippocampus retrieves it out of the long-term memory, when I'm like, Brian, who, what is it? And then I'm looking at it and I'm like, Brian Williams, of course, Alison Williams, some part of my brain is retrieving that.
Yeah.
So the hippocampus is kind of like time stamping it. Like, yes, it was Williams, which means the next time I'm trying to find this name, I'm likely to see you in my mind's eye. What was that? Because I'm likely to retrieve kind of like everything else as well as that important information.
Wow.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah. It's why you can kind of like, you know, a song might take you back into a particular kind of like place or person or smell. Mm-hmm. And it might not have actually been what happened to you, but something in your brain is like, that is associated with that.
Yeah.
And it presents you with that information.
Yeah.
So I think everyone, we all just need to realize really that our eyewitness account of our own experiences is highly unreliable. That's what he said, Malcolm Gladwell and his friend, like, which account of 9/11 is correct?
Yeah.
Neither of them, most likely.
Yeah.
They've just got their own story about what happened.
That has a massive implication for the justice system, surely. I'm just starting to really worry about that now.
Yeah, well, that's why they want to take someone's, what is it called, statement?
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately.
Right.
Yeah, because if you wait, then it gets polluted with all this other stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But then as you do wait... You know, if you've taken a statement early and then you wait for a trial to happen in that intervening, you'd probably want to reread your statements, wouldn't you?
Hey, do you know what else I watched this week?
Tell me.
It's that Unbelievable TV show. It's on Netflix and it has Toni Collette in it. So you've probably seen like ads for that.
No, I don't remember seeing
it. I'd heard about it and people saying it was good.
Okay.
And I sort of been had some evenings and I had some time on my hands. So I was like, I'm going to watch
I've
this.
Heard on a podcast about this.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. I think it was like 8 episodes, 40 minutes each or something. So I could watch it like in a few evenings.
So
and it's about sexual assaults that are occurring and this girl who's come out of the foster care system who's kind of vulnerable to that idea of traumatic events happening and not really wanting to stay in that space of this memory. And she makes a statement of being raped and then under pressure retracts the statement.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really, it's so well done. And Toni Collette is just like so watchable.
Wow.
And this other main female cop who plays it with her is really like really lovely as well.
Okay.
It's a really great show.
Because yeah, I heard about that on a podcast, yeah, I think. And yeah. So now I want to see it.
Yeah. So I mean that's like a great example of like the day that the assault happened. She, you know, physical evidence and take your statement, this, that and the other. And then a couple of weeks later the policemen are kind of saying, so you said that this happened. Like, are you sure? Mm. And kind of pressing on her own details of the account. And at that point she's kind of like,
I don't know if I am anymore.
Yeah. Mm. I'm pretty sure it happened. Yeah. Maybe you've just made this up for attention or oof, like whatever. Yeah. And it's why people who have experienced multiple traumas don't do great on the witness stand. Mm. Because like, again, trauma memories get kind of stored in this whole kind of polluted area.
Yeah.
And they're more likely to encounter people who say to them things like that never happened, or to play down like events.
Of course. Yeah. Because, you know, the people who created the trauma for them will want to try and minimize it and wash it away.
Well, that's right. And child protection and stuff like that come along, like, what happened? You know, yeah. Like, you're prone to saying, like, nothing happened. It was all fine. Yeah. Hang on, you called the cops because you were really scared. Oh, did I? No. Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, anyway, back to Rosie. She's so great, isn't she?
She's fantastic.
She's just so wonderful.
And it just, the way in which she talks about events and really truly tries to, I mean, it feels like she's really trying to forgive her mother and understand her mum's perspective.
Yeah.
Which is, golly, it's a huge, huge ask, I think, after all that she was put through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did listen to the start of episode 2, so mm-hmm. chapter 2, mm-hmm. and it talks about sort of her going into her mum's own history a little bit as well,
yeah.
Which, you know, you might be prone to forget about after listening sort of like to the whole book, although I suppose it does stay present. Like, you know, that idea that like, yeah, she had a really, really rough time.
Yeah.
She's one of four girls. Actually, the Australian story is lovely because it shows the four sisters.
Oh, isn't it interesting? Because that was another thing that I really wanted, particularly her sister Rhiannon. Like, I wanted to hear.
You wanted her to be well.
Yeah, and that she was well.
Yeah. She's great. And they're really close, the four of them. And that's they talk nice. About kind of like they all had a really rough time to various degrees because they have slightly different dads, slightly different times that they came into the picture.
Yeah.
And
different traumas.
Yeah. Mm. And that they kind of say, like, we learned that we couldn't rely on the adults around us, but, you know, we didn't always get along as young people, but the fact that we share our stories now and we are connected to one another and we're committed to not repeating the same patterns into, you know, our children, and, like, we support one another. So
that's so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's the thing that happens with trauma as well, is that it is all you know then.
Yeah.
And so is that something that often happens, that people who have experienced trauma then perpetuate trauma on others?
Of course.
Yeah. Hurt people hurt people?
Hurt people hurt people.
Mm.
Yeah. And also just that the means that you would take in order to cope with what you've been through is likely to be drug and alcohol abuse or whatever, you know, running away from a difficult situation, and then you encounter homelessness, and when you're homeless, you need to rob places to get money, which puts you into the criminal justice system, which means that you encounter, you know, rough sort of people who are going to say, join the bikie gang or whatever. Yeah. Of course. So, and I think what's really sad, especially about Rosie's story, is about her experiences in the foster care system as well.
Yes. Right?
Which is about trying to, you know, give kids that positive start of, you know, stability and containment. And
that was not what she experienced.
That was not what she experienced. I think that's almost the most heartbreaking part for me. Well, because it's like the systemic abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you hear stories like that enough to know that is really quite common.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, you stick vulnerable people in places where you can't keep a serious eye on them, really.
You have
to trust. And of course, if you want to get your hands on vulnerable people, then you know.
Yeah.
It's just like if you're interested in teaching, you'll want to be around kids and you'll want to be in places where you can teach others and you can do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Same things if you're interested in hurting little people. You will find ways.
Terrible.
And it's just
awful. Yeah,
it's really insidious and horrible.
Absolutely awful.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sure you listened to Ashton Kutcher on Dax Shepherd.
Yes.
Yes. We already talked about that last time, didn't we?
I think we just mentioned it briefly.
We mentioned it. Mm. Do you remember the part where he, like, Ashton Kutcher's going to save the world, right?
Yes.
Because he's going to stop sex trafficking and child pornography and all this stuff. And do you remember him talking about the foster care system?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's using all these celebrity and tech dollars to invest in these charities, but, like, organisations that's looking into. I remember him saying about the costing of the child protection system, and this is in the States, just being like, you know, that money could be so better used, because when we don't invest in having those kids in decent places that's well managed, then, you know, the repercussions into their adulthood mean we're incarcerating them.
Exactly.
Yay, adults.
Which costs
way more.
And he was talking about there were some people who were rejected as foster parents because they didn't have a fire extinguisher in their home or something as ridiculous as that. And, you know, and so their charity sometimes puts a whole bunch of fire extinguishers in child protection workers' cars so they can just hand them out like lollies, you know. Just things like that where you eliminate hassles.
Yeah.
You just try and eliminate as many hassles as possible.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, good people don't end up looking after these really vulnerable small humans.
Yeah. Which is really clever because, like, you know, child protection's lived in the humanities, which is my world. Like, bloody people who read books and go, let's save people through therapy. But, and, you know, which that's great, but when the problem is systemic, like, you know, that's why I love that he's kind of like, we're taking tech solutions, right, to these humanitarian problems.
Yeah.
It's like, great, yes, awesome.
Let's engineer a solution here.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. And because even just from the economic perspective, there's always an argument for kind of like increasing funding in this area.
Yeah.
Leads to savings down the track.
Yes.
It always comes out that way.
Well, and I think we really need to stop talking about this kind of money as a cost. It is an investment.
It's an investment.
It is an investment.
Yeah.
And if you spend now, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they
That's
say.
Right.
And yeah, you keep people out of these situations where they will get further traumatized and need help or end up being, you know, injurious to others or end up incarcerated, any of those things, it can save a fortune.
Yeah.
And plus, you're actually people do well by doing good then, you know, like it's.
And one thing I love about the COVID-19 panic is that this is a real kind of come together moment for people who are about community and, you know, the well-being of the tribe is important.
Yeah.
You know, like we need to bind together, like.
Yes.
Do you know, as you're talking, it just kind of got me thinking about another one of my real kind of bugbears when people say, well, you know, look at Rosie Waterland. She's not repeating the patterns of her family. You know, she is a person who has, you know, pulled herself up by the bootstraps.
Ugh.
And so if she can do it, then everyone else can.
Mm.
That kind of argument.
Ugh. Yeah. Frustrating in the least.
It's just, you know. I think it's just it's the whataboutism, and it's just kind of cherry picking examples of people who are in the minority who have managed to kind of navigate for various reasons all these different things.
Well,
and one thing that happened with Rosie is that, like, it wasn't a miracle really. She was bright, but she also was semi-adopted by her uncle, who sent her to a boarding school, private school. Was it boarding?
Yeah, it sounded like it was boarding.
Yeah, but, you know, it was something that was like cost a whole load of money.
Yeah.
She says, of course, she didn't have great experiences there because they treated her like the Howzo kid and she didn't belong. But, like, she was supported in education.
Yes.
And he paid for all of her therapy and her psychiatric bills. Like, so, like, she was lucky to have a near family member who was willing to provide that.
Yeah.
For her.
Yeah, and in general circumstances,
that's
that
not
would
available.
Never have been available for anyone.
I
and
know.
That's when, you know, there are complex situations in her mental health journey that will take the rest of her life.
And I think she would always say too, like, you may look at me and go, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm the one who survived. I'm different. But she's like, I am not okay.
Yeah.
Every day is a battle with the PTSD that I have from the events that have happened to me when I was quite young.
And she even talks about, you know, at the end there, how she's still bulimic. She's still doing harm to herself in that way.
Mm.
She's still obviously challenged by her mental health constantly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's only so much a brain can take before it breaks a little bit, right?
Yeah. And I think too, there's a certain thing about, you know, like she loves TV. She loves writing because she just shut herself away in her room all the time and was just like practicing, like imagining being a showrunner, being a writer, watching Friends, doing little mock-up episodes. Like, you know, I love that.
Yeah.
And she's found a way to, because I think, you know, here's the thing about human beings is that even from the outset, you look at them and kind of go like, oh, well, you know, they're being caught up with the wrong crowd. They're taking drugs. They're promiscuous, like whatever. Those people all have innate strengths and abilities and interests. And, you know, like Rosie with her writing and her sense of humor and her lens of the world, they, on the flip side of people's behavior, is usually a story of like merit and strength that just can't come out because of the circumstances that they're in.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And there are people are redeemable, you know. There is no one to be written off.
There are
ways in which we as a society can actually support and help and get people the psychiatric, psychological help that they need to move through this. But you know, it starts with making sure that people are safe. You got to be safe first.
That's right.
You know, that whole Maslow hierarchy of needs thing.
Indeed.
Which now has toilet paper on it. It's very important.
Maybe that's a great place to end.
Maybe it is. Yeah. It is. So in the midst of pandemic concerns, now is the best time, as is any other time, to be kind to everyone around you, you know, like lend a hand. If you have elderly neighbours, pop a note in their letterbox. Do you need me to get anything from the shops? I'll drop it on your, you know, front steps. It's introversion paradise as well, because apparently Uber Eats will just drop it on the front step. You don't even have to talk to the driver. Big one was
and
very
then they come out with the antiseptic spray over the bag.
Exactly.
Take it away.
But, you know, I mean, we laugh about it, but there are people in Italy who are being turned away, you know, 80 plus, they're just turning people away from hospitals and saying good luck to you because, you know.
Thank goodness for our health system, hey?
Thank goodness for our health system.
Yes.
And a big shout out to everyone working in health and allied health at the moment. And we applaud you always, but by goodness are you guys under the pump and we appreciate it. Exactly.
And everyone out there doing their best to flatten the curve.
Flatten the curve.
So there are enough resources around for all vulnerable people.
Indeed.
Who need it.
Alrighty.
So it won't last forever.
It won't. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
But I realised that we haven't talked about what we're doing next time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Did you have a plan, Rach?
Take a sip. I did, because I sent you a little list.
You did, didn't
ago.
You?
Oh, excellent. Well, you'll have to loan me the book.
Oh.
We were going to talk about that female medicine thing.
Yeah. It's called, that's part of the gender data gap. Invisible Women, the book is called. Mm-hmm. So we can grab that from my place a little bit later.
And you have read it all?
I have read it all.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Invisible Women.
And it's not for holiday reading because it got me cranky on my holiday. So because it will just make you mad.
No. But I tell you what though, you've told me snippets and I've been telling people in session.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, yes, women and our health has been neglected. And it's not okay.
Darn
so I'm getting
straight.
All fired up in advance.
Excellent.
So
oh, I love it.
I will
okay.
actually read the book and
good.
Yes, learn the facts. And
all right.
We will talk Invisible Women.
That sounds fantastic.
Okay.
And in the meantime, can you guys make sure if you love what you're listening to mm-hmm. share it among your friends, you know, subscribe to
that
Public
would be
Kettle rate us, review us.
I know, right? I was going to cancel today. I was like, oh, pandemic, stay away. And then I was like, well, people are going to be home and needing something to listen
to. They'll need to listen to something. Us rabbiting on about Rosie Waterland.
And they don't date, you know, so you can watch them all.
Exactly. Except you have to listen because it's an audio audio medium. Oh, God. We really need to get moving.
All right.
So we will talk to you next time. But in the meantime,
hug your babies
and be kind to yourself and each other. And we will see you then.
See you then. Bye.
Bye, Rach.